Aloha, welcome to The Conversation. I'm Yenji Denise, sitting in for Catherine Cruz. Local news is changing. Newspapers are getting thinner, local television is under increasing financial pressure, and more people than ever are turning to social media for information. At the same time, a proposal by the Office of Hawaiian Affairs to purchase KITV has sparked a broader conversation about who owns the press, who tells Hawaii's stories, and what it takes to keep local journalism alive. Today, we're asking, what role does local news play in our communities? Can the business model still work? And what kind of local media do we want for the future? We want to hear from you. The number to reach us is 808-941-3689.
This July, experience HPR's Live from the Atherton Classical Concert Series. On July 18th, violinist Yuri Hughes joins pianist Jasmine Nagano for an intimate recital. Then on July 25th, vocalist Kaylin Howard and pianist Brian Bethia take the stage for an evening of classical song and piano. Get your tickets now at hprtickets.org. This event is sponsored by HMSA.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to Ulupono Initiative.
This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Yenji Denise, and thanks so much for joining us today. In the studio, we have Sophie Koch, longtime Honolulu Star advertiser, political reporter, now an independent journalist. Gerald Kato, retired journalism professor, veteran journalist, and president of Media Council Hawaii. And Mayor Rick Blangiardi, former general manager of Hawaii News Now. Welcome to you all. So happy to have you here. We are talking about the local media landscape here in Hawaii and what the Office of Hawaiian Affairs possible purchase of KITV could mean for Hawaii. Sophie, I want to start with you. You recently wrote a report in conjunction with the Hawaii Institute for Public Affairs about Hawaii's news desert. When people hear news desert, they picture rural America. What does that actually look like here in the islands?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. What we were trying to do with this report was really get the baseline data of where we were in Hawaii in terms of the decline of local news. This is a national issue, but nobody really quantified it here locally. And so what we found in terms of what the landscape looks like is dramatic declines in the number of publications. They've been reduced by about half just in the past 20 years. But probably more importantly, a reduction in local reporters. So we've lost at least half our reporters in the past 20 years. The neighbor islands have been really hard hit. And so I would say that that's really where we're looking at news deserts here in Hawaii, where we still have our major dailies operating on those islands, but to some extent, they've really become ghost papers, shells of their former selves, in the sense that they don't have the needed number of reporters to actually go out and cover the issues that are important to their communities and the issues that are important to maintaining civic engagement and an informed population. Of course, we've seen some upstarts. Civil Beat is the big one. It's not really upstart anymore. It's much more established. But we've seen small news organizations trying to fill the void, but it's just really tough. And so the issues that Hawaii is grappling with are the same issues that states all over the country are grappling with.
Wow, Gerald, you know, half the publications, half the reporters, you've worked in television and print. When we have reductions like that, what do you think, what are the issues that are not getting covered right now?
Oh, a whole lot of issues I can think of. When I worked at the Honolulu Advertiser in the days when I considered the golden age of newspapers here, we covered, we had a fully staffed bureau at the Capitol. I was among at least four people who were there, and we were there all the time. We had a science reporter, we had a labor reporter, we had a business staff, you know, a whole list of people. And I mentioned that because I think at the Advertiser, we were proud of the fact that we knew what was going on in this town, in the small communities, in the big bureaucracies. We had people out there constantly talking to the people about what's going on. And so we had a finger on the pulse, and I think that's sorely missing in this day. I'm glad that there's a civil beat, and I'm glad of all these other operations that have arisen, but you're never going to replicate that kind of expertise that was around in the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Mr. Mayor, we asked you here today not in your capacity as mayor, but really as a veteran television executive. You know, at the end of the day, the way the model works now, news is a business. So what are the economic realities of running a television station in a market like Hawaii?
Yeah, it's not so much even now. It's always been a business, and that's been just it. And as Gerald just alluded to, the golden era, it was a golden era in broadcast as well, although the television market compared to the local newspaper market was always at a great disparity. Advertising revenues at the then two publications was more than triple what the collective was of all the television stations. So there was kind of a duality in a local broadcast operation. You had the business in general of how the TV station was faring, but then how was the news faring within that from an economic standpoint. Ironically enough, the success of your news operation is also what elevated your station to popularity as well, and that just contributed to it. But over the course of time, ownerships have changed, technology has changed, viewer appetites have changed, and how people get their news, as you said, in the open. So that's really affected the business model. And once that business model goes down, then they start trying to do more with less. And the reality is you do less with less. The repertorial staff that Gerald was talking about was incredible. It was like a legion. I remember competing against it. They had people everywhere. And you need that in the fact-finding in order to properly vet stories and do the kind of due diligence and really establish the relationships, build that trust, get that information, and put it out there. None of that's at play now.
Well, when we think about the changing landscape, now let's talk about the Office of Hawaiian Affairs. It is exploring a purchase of KITV. Allen Media Group purchased that station in 2020 for $30 million. OHA considering now taking it over. OHA Chair Kai Kahele recently explained to Catherine Cruz that this is about amplifying the Native Hawaiian voice.
Did you know the Green Bay Packers are owned by the people of Green Bay?
No, I did not know that.
It is. It is the only professional NFL football team that is owned by the people of Green Bay. It is a publicly owned football team. And the governance structures behind that are potentially very similar to what we would do here at OHA. And I learned that by going through the process of a very exhaustive process of attempting to find national firms across the country from the East Coast to the West Coast that would do this type of due diligence for OHA as a government entity, a semi-autonomous one that has an independence from other branches of government here in Hawaii and is very unique when compared to the other 50 states across the country, where the Office of Hawaiian Affairs would own and control a major media station in Hawaii. And I truly believe that it is quintessentially OHA's mission. The opportunity to have powerful messaging in media is important in a media market that is being consolidated by the most powerful, monopolizing billionaires in the country. You know, we see whether it's the Murdochs or the Ellisons that are consolidating media. To have one station owned by a non-billionaire in Hawaii is something I get excited about. I think it's huge for Hawaiians. I think it can create a very inclusive, transparent, integrity-filled public messaging. And it's something that is out of the box, and that's why I like it.
Mayor Blangiardi, what are your thoughts about that argument?
Yeah, well, I disagree with that. I mean, I think it's fascinating that Kai compared it to the Green Bay Packers. You know, the fact is it's a public broadcast license with the FCC. You know, we've been down this road before. In 2009, when we were selling KGMB, and I was running KGMB, Oz, the late, great Oz Stender, came forward, and OHA made a run. But after a couple of days of behind-closed-door meetings, it just seemed impractical at the time, especially given what one does with a local broadcast meeting with the FCC. You know, the operative word it says is control. You know, I don't think the government should be controlling public airways. If they wanted to have that same voice on behalf of the Hawaiian people, and it's been tried and it's already going on, there are plenty of cable channels, digital channels, other things evolving. But when you hold these broadcast licenses, they're designed to work in the public trust. That was always something we really took to heart over all the years and all the settings I was in running broadcast operations. That's a little bit too narrowed and too skewed as far as I'm concerned. Let's take nothing away from Hawaiians having a voice. It's just, you just don't own a public broadcast station.
Gerald, from an editorial standpoint, what safeguards do you think would have to exist to protect editorial independence in the kind of ownership model that OHA is looking at?
Well, it's complicated to say the least. I mean, what Kai Kahele offers, there's a lot to unpack there. You know, let me say this. I do think that there is a seed of a very useful idea there, and that is about local ownership. We've gotten so far away from local ownership that, broadcasters are reporting to people way out there in Tuscaloosa or wherever they're located. But local ownership can be a very big plus for a television station. Whether the Green Bay Packer model works or not, I've always been intrigued by that model, by the way. Whether it works for running a television station is something we can go on and on in debate. I'd like to engage in that debate because I think it's an interesting model. Now, a couple of things I would like to say about the proposal. I do think the localism aspect is a very positive thing. I think operating, as a practical matter, operating a station, if it's going to be the OHA board, it's just not going to work. They're going to have to find some model that manages the station at arm's length from the board, because the board acts as a political body and they have a hard enough time agreeing on their agenda, much less running a station. Another positive point, by the way, about having a station, I had a student once some years ago. She was a really good student, and she did a story for our newscast in Olelo, Hawaii. It was in all Hawaiian. She shot it herself. She interviewed people who could speak Olelo, Hawaii, and it was a wonderful story. I wish more people could see it. And if we could encourage students like that through having a station owned by OHA, that would be wonderful. One final thing, though, about this, and like I say, you know, there's a lot to unpack here. I think there is, as the mayor points out, lots of problems going forward, not least of which having a government entity such as OHA owning a license. And as a practical matter, getting it through the FCC.
Let's get to a caller now this morning, and thank you so much. We have Cynthia on the line. Cynthia, let's hear from you.
But please pass along the message that KIKU, Piku, and KITV should be locally owned, sponsored, and supported. If OHA is the correct, responsible entity to do that, all the better. We need to keep that programming viable and available. Mahalo.
Thank you so much for that, Cynthia. Sophie, I want to bring you into the conversation. How does ownership play a role in what is covered? You heard Gerald's thoughts there, and then the caller obviously saying that Kiku, which is a sister station of KITV and would presumably be part of this deal, should be locally owned. So how does ownership influence what's actually covered?
I don't know how ownership would influence what is covered. I think whether it's local or national, I think the bigger issue is how would OHA's ownership of KITV influence what is covered. And it's not clear from what Kaikahele has said publicly exactly what the vision is. I think that conversation needs to be a lot more robust, and maybe it's just so early in the process right now that it hasn't really been fleshed out. But it's not clear to me whether he's talking about KITV being a mouthpiece for OHA, which I think would be concerning, or if he's envisioning it as remaining a local news organization that just had better representation of Native Hawaiian voices. If it's the latter, then I think that's all good. I think all of our news outlets can do a better job having more Native Hawaiian voices and covering Native Hawaiian issues better. But it just raises so many tricky ethical questions. What influence will the OHA board have over the content that is covered? Will there be a very explicit firewall where OHA does not influence the stories or the coverage? Who will have control over who hires or fires the news director? Will the KITV newsroom be able to cover OHA aggressively? Will they be able to cover the legislature and the governor, government in general, without any concerns about retaliation or issues with the withdrawal of funding? It's very tricky. And I think it is an interesting idea, but it does come with a whole can of worms.
Well, I could just say that based on what you and Gerald just said, Sophie, just to cut through it, the FCC would not approve it. I feel pretty confident in saying that.
Okay, but you can elaborate.
For all the reasons I was just going to say, please expand on that.
For all the reasons that you just said, and that's not how they grant licenses to public broadcast to stations. You know, if they want a voice, there are many avenues. I said digital channels, cable channels. They could buy hours on television. They certainly have the funds to do that. But to own and control a television station, as Kai said in his own words, brings with it, as a government entity, problems that they're not going to open up that door. If you open up that door, that's problematic across the country. It's not going to happen.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about Hawaii's changing media landscape and OHA's possible purchase of KITV. We want to know what you think of the idea, so give us a call. Join our discussion, 808-941-3689. We did reach out to a number of folks. OHA's proposal, of course, drawing both concern and enthusiasm. Take a listen to very different viewpoints from Chris Coney Bear, board member of the Media Council of Hawaii, and digital creator Kekoa Kealoha.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is a state agency. That's not a great idea. I think most people would agree. State government is really not who they would turn to for independent views about what's going on in the world. And that's what we need. We need independent journalism in order to really inform the public. And that's going the way if the community doesn't sort of stand up and say, we want independent voices, then it might get taken over by others.
I personally love the idea of having media that is by and for Hawaiians. Whether or not it's actually the right choice to make is a different conversation, just because I know financially there are so many other things to consider. But for me personally, I love the idea of owning media because in New Zealand, for example, Maori media has been crucial in helping to promote the growth and the resurgence of Maori language and culture. And they even have news broadcasts in Maori, which to me, that's a missing component in the rebirth of Olelo Hawaii.
Mr. Mayor, I'm curious because you did bring up that this is a road that has been explored before. Yeah. What was it that did not make this possible?
It's a state entity. And again, and the FCC was probably stricter then than it is today, perhaps. Look, we've done programming like that. When I came back to Hawaii, I just finished running Telemundo as a president of an all-Spanish-speaking language. Great success story. I came back to Hawaii in 2002 and realized we weren't doing anything in Hawaiian other than mentioning street names and names of individuals in our news. So we started doing Olelo. We started doing shows where we worked with Print on Aleo. We actually won a whole lot of awards, you know, for it. But they ran out of funding, and we didn't have enough money to do it. It's not like I'm against that. Kamehameha Schools had OEVTV, was their whole channel dedicated to that specifically. So nobody's trying to quell that voice. But ownership of a broadcast entity and all that comes with that license, I lived with that for all those years, whether I was president of a national company or a general manager of major properties, not just here in Hawaii, but on the mainland. It's very strict. The covenants in that are very strict about how you operate. So this is far left field. And I heard what he just said about in New Zealand. That's a different government. It's a different country. I'm talking about the United States, the Federal Communications Commission, and the rules that you have to play by. And as diluted as things have become, they're not going to cross that line.
Gerald,
I've often wondered why OHACH chose to investigate getting a broadcast license as opposed to all the alternatives. You know, you could stream you could do streaming media, OEV television, support that, a cable channel. But it seems to me that the thinking is that they want to appeal to a very broad audience, and broader than just Native Hawaiians, but in the sense that they want to communicate with other people in the broadcast, in the shrinking broadcast audience. But I'd be curious to learn more about why the focus is on a broadcast license. A broadcast license, as Rick points out, comes with a lot of obligations, not least of which that the licensee act in the public interest, which includes having a bona fide newscast. And as Sophie has pointed out, you know, there are lots of problems attached with this because who does the news director, who do the reporters report to? Going to report on OHA board meetings, which have been pretty contentious? Are you going to report only OHA's position on various Native Hawaiian issues, or are you going to incorporate other voices? There are a lot of issues that they could get around, I think, by just going to streaming or cable or other outlets. So I'm curious as to why they're pursuing a license, which I don't think they can get through the FCC, quite frankly.
Well, let's hear a little bit more from Chair Kahele on his thoughts about why owning a television station is a good idea.
Communication and controlling the narrative is a powerful tool to advance the interests of Native Hawaiians beyond the Native Hawaiian community. You know, the reality is that Native Hawaiians represent about 22% of the state's overall population of 1.5 million residents. If you look at the different branches of government, that percentage is pretty reflective of Native Hawaiian representation. And so at the end of the day, if we want to move the needle on Native Hawaiian interests, Native Hawaiian values, educating the community in Native Hawaiian culture, we have to look beyond the Native Hawaiian community to the broader community and appeal to that community. And that's what I think this gives us an opportunity to do.
You know, I have no problem with everything that Kai just said, except not owned by a state agency.
So that's the rub. Do you think if this was a private entity?
If you had local ownership who decided they were going to try to make a business model out of what he just said, then have at it. Because there's a dichotomy between local ownership and a government-owned operation.
Yeah, Sophie, what do you think about that tension? The idea that, you know, OHA is, of course, you know, elected by the people. Those are, at the end of the day, it is public money that would go to support this, you know, and the tension there versus what Chair Kahele is saying.
I guess I have two thoughts on that. I mean, what I bristle at is when Kai says that part of the mission is to be able to control the narrative. And I think journalists just immediately, they don't want anyone controlling the narrative. They're seeking stories that are fair and independent and free of undue influence. But, you know, the second thing is I'm not immediately alarmed by government having some role in supporting local media. It's always been very controversial. I think that the most important thing is the way that it's structured, because the devil is always in the details. I think you can have government funding for local news that is independent as long as it's structured correctly, and increasingly nationally, public policy organizations are looking at this. So things like providing tax credits to journalists' salaries to try to stop the loss of number of reporters, things like that. But I just think we haven't heard enough from OHA as to whether they're even thinking about what those safeguards would be, or whether they even see it as a concern in terms of, oh, I mean, OHA is a quasi-government agency, but I still sort of see it as a government entity. But I just think we don't know enough.
Yeah, and just so that the audience is aware, we did reach out to OHA. They say they are moving forward with a 90-day due diligence review at a cost of around $172,000. That's looking at all the books and some of these issues. If they do move forward, of course, as the mayor has noted, the FCC would have to approve the sale. You seem pretty dubious about that prospect.
I am. I look, I live with the, when you're running properties, I'm a rookie into politics, right? Everybody talked about that. But the fact is, for 43 years, I had a quasi-governmental job. And I can tell you a large part of my day, and all the time, was making sure we didn't get in trouble with the FCC and all the things that we did, the quality of our newscasts, the things that we reported on, the public service announcements we did. There's a covenant there on how one functions. It's antithetical to what's being suggested. I got no problem with that, and I don't even know what the business model would be on that. So I don't want to come off negative, because it's a very sensitive issue. I'm all for promoting the voice of Hawaiian people, but we're talking about station ownership, and people have to be able to divorce themselves between the two. Station ownership, operations, and the covenant that you have to uphold as a broadcaster is very different. This is not buying a bakery down the street. It's a very different business that brings with it a lot of strict requirements.
And from a financial perspective, given the landscape of local news around the country and what Sophie laid out at the start of our conversation, is this a good investment?
Well, I don't think it's a good investment. It depends. I would tell you, if they paid $30 million for that station, if that's the asking price tag, which is what Byron Allen, as you reported, supposedly paid, that would be an incredible multiple. It would be... that would have to be probably a multiple of almost 30 to 1, and nobody would do that. I was in the business when it was in its heyday, and if you got a 10 to 15 multiple, that was tremendous on cash flow. And then those multiples started coming down all the way down to 2 to 1. And it's a risky business. That's why there's been so much consolidation. I mean, I could talk about this for hours and what's happened there. And look, I'm a strong proponent of local ownership. I would love to see it. I've been part of a local ownership. I've tried to buy television stations, not easily done. And it's very cost intensive as well. So when I talk about that, if you're running an operation where it's going to cost you, let's say, $10 million a year to run on a month, and you're only taking in $1 million of revenue, you're in a deficit of $9 million the first year. Okay, that's what that looks like. And then you're trying to satisfy the debt covenant. Where did the $30 million come from, the purchase price on top of that? If you want, I could run this all the way down the table and tell you why financially it's not even a feasible deal. They'd have to get the station for free to have even any kind of chance to possibly break even, and that won't happen.
But Gerald, you know, what we're hearing from Kai Kahele in that soundbite that we just played is that part of the motivation, obviously, is not purely financial. It's to amplify the voice and to move the needle on Native Hawaiian interests and
he
issues.
He wants to communicate with the broader audience. It's just not communicating with Hawaiian community. The broader audience out there, the Japanese, Chinese, Portuguese, Hollies in the audience, and he recognizes that the only way they're going to do that is to have some kind of license. By the way, you know, let me mention this. There is some precedent for a government entity owning a broadcast license. PBS was started that way. In fact, the PBS license here was originally held by the state of Hawaii. And, you know, if you could come up with a model, I'm not going to come up with one off the top of my head, but if you could come up with a model along those lines, PBS, which is having its own struggles right now, but a PBS type of organization that funded a station like this, that may be an interesting possibility.
Then you'd be buying the spectrum here is what it is, because the PBS model in broadcast commercial television have very different ground rules.
Different ground rules. You're right, I see problems ahead for that.
Yeah.
You know, one thing on the political environment, though, let me ask you this, Rick. You think a Telemundo kind of station would pass muster in the current configuration of the FCC?
Well, they have now that they're owned by NBC. That was when I was there. We sold to NBC.
Mm-hmm.
There's been no issues with that. I mean, you know.
I mean, in the current environment.
In the current environment, the FCC.
Yeah.
In what?
In the sense that the Brendan Carr, the current chair of the FCC, seems to be opposed to this idea of diversity. Diverse voices.
And he's got a problem then. If anything, you want to celebrate diversity. That's the whole idea of public broadcasting. You know, I mean, being a I want to be careful with the audience here. This PBS, Public Broadcast Network, but it's all public broadcasting. And that's the covenant you have your community. That would be crazy. First of all, it's not a minority as it is. I mean, the Hispanic population, last time I turned around, was pretty large in America. And it's over a $1 trillion economy from the standpoint of its viability from a commercial standpoint. There's just so many factors there. If that's his approach, good luck. I've been away from it. You brought me out of retirement, okay?
I
can't tell you how many years I've spent with lawyers beating my brains in about the do's and don'ts as it relates to FCC and the responsibility you had to the then different ownerships. I worked for some great ownerships along the way. But, you know, at the end of the day, it was a pretty strict. We had, like I used the word covenant before. Believe me, there are covenants that you have to uphold as a broadcaster in a local community for the integrity of all that it represents. You know, you don't control the narrative. You've got to be fair. You've got to vet your stories. You've got to put journalists on. That's how it used to be. I know it's changed now, but I don't think those covenants have changed on paper or any person.
No, I recall when I was in television news, you had to report to the FCC on everything.
Right. Well, this is the conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. We have been talking about the future of local media. What's your take on the state of local news? You can join our discussion this morning by calling 808-941-3689. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this break.
Support for HPR comes from Chaminade University's online doctorate in education in organizational leadership, preparing leaders to inspire teams, drive change, and grow organizations. Chaminade.edu.
In the Philippines, former President Rodrigo Duterte's so-called drug war killed as many as 30,000 people going back to 2016. Now there's a coffee shop run by family members and loved ones of those who died. It's become a place of communal support and to share with others who know what they've all been through. That's next time on The World.
Beginning this afternoon at 1.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, whose contributors help Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Honolulu Waldorf School.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Yanji Denise, and our guests in the studio this morning are Sophie Koch, longtime Honolulu Star Advertiser political reporter, now an independent journalist, Gerald Kato, retired journalism professor and veteran journalist in many mediums across the state, and Mayor Rick Blangiardi, former general manager of Hawaii News Now. You know, Sophie, we focused a lot of our conversation this morning on OHA, but I want to widen this out to the news more broadly. You know, how has the consumption of news habits and the fact that so many people are turning to digital platforms and social media changed the model when you look at this sort of news desert prospect that you laid out in your report?
Well, obviously, people are increasingly getting their news from social media, whether it be Facebook or Twitter, now X, or Instagram. A lot of that content, though, is being generated by news organizations. So that's just the medium. I think that the broader concern locally and nationally isn't the way that news is being consumed. It's that with the shrinkage of local news and the and how social media has taken off, what we found is that all of these quasi or news organizations or entities that aren't actually doing news are filling that void. And so what we're having is this dramatic spread of misinformation, and people also are increasingly getting and sharing stories within their little silos. So a lot of stories that aren't actually originally reported or sourced are getting shared widely online and through Facebook that are, you know, arguably it is fake news. And so it's creating, I would say it's really wreaking havoc on civic life and our shared understanding of what is happening in the world. Like, we don't really agree on the facts anymore. And
yeah, and Mr. Mayor, you know, asking you to put on sort of thread the needle on both hats in this case, because now in your role as the mayor, I'm sure that you have to battle some of that as well when people, you know, a lot of the news sites that I see, at least on my Instagram feed, throw raw video up there and leave it to the viewer to interpret what has happened. Tell us about what that means, you know, in a government
role.
Well,
for us, it meant a complete overhaul of our communications department. I'm very proud of Scott Humber, our director of communications, and we've actually pretty much employed our own, created our own newsroom in order to counter all of that. I mean, I was telling Gerald before we came on the air, we just added up in preparation for this show. We've hired across the board more than 20 people from the local news organizations.
Stop stealing all of them.
Well, you know what? Because I have an appreciation for a good journalist and good storytelling and the responsibility that goes with that. And one of the things that I knew we would be up against is, based on how things were and what's out there, is that we had to be really good at doing that. And so we cannot over-communicate in the role that we're in. You know, we will do a show like this. We'll do radio shows. We do podcasts. We make ourselves accessible. I don't ever turn down an interview or request for anything from the media. We hold responsible press conferences. We just do everything we possibly can. We're all over social media as well, understanding the impact, anything that we can do to get good information out there. And it's not so much about controlling the narrative, and I agree with some people are hypersensitive about that, but it's also about trying to combat false information.
Yeah.
You know, and people will take to that. And if they have a disagreement, it's amazing how they can distort things. And I could show you incredible examples of just outright lies. So for me, it's one more thing that we had to take on. We could not do communications at the city the way it used to be done before. We had to be in that. We had to be in the field fighting for the truth, if you will, on what it was we were doing and why we were doing it and what it meant to the public.
Let's bring in Chris from Makaha. He has a comment on the air this morning. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. I just wanted to respond to what that one gentleman was saying about the financial potential. There's not enough money for the stations that are already there. And going and directing your audience, you know, to such a small percentage of the population, there's plenty of them, but, you know, they're not going to make enough money to be viable. And I don't know all the financials about it, but I used to be a news shooter for KITV. and all of the other stations as well. And my son came along 20 years later and worked with Catherine at KITV again. You know, that station, all of these stations have been sold and resold and resold. Nobody's around for the deal. You know, nobody's going to stick it out. And I just going with an OHA programming, I don't see it making any money for anybody, and actually we'll end up losing money. So there, that's all, what I got to say.
Thank you so much, Chris. Mr. Mayor.
Well, he's right. I mean, but also I'm going to say it again. You know, just the debt covenant alone, or what they're asking for if you came with that purchase price, just that alone, beyond your operational costs. You know, business model is pretty simple. Revenue, expenses, profit, okay? How much does it cost to rent the station that they're talking about? How, you know, that against what kind of revenue you're taking in? And, you know, it's costly just to produce original programming, I might add. So even if they stayed at ABC affiliate, all this other stuff in and above itself is very cost intensive. So I don't see how the math works at all beyond the FCC. I would be hard pressed to have them show me how the math works on that.
Yeah, Gerald, would love your thoughts. I mean, given also what we heard about not having kind of a common language that Sophie was laying out, the fact that we all are sort of victims of our own algorithm and
we
having
are.
Different conversations.
And, you know, going into the future with artificial intelligence, it's going to get even worse. Mm-hmm. I think trying to define what's true and what's not, it's very, very difficult, because you have a lot of people on the internet with counter narratives. You have, you know, when I was a graduate student a long time ago, we celebrated this idea that many voices, we should have all voices participating. Well, we've got a lot of voices participating now, and it is a mass of confusion. Mm-hmm. What we need, and what we've lost with the newspapers, especially, is some authoritative voice that tells you, to the best possible way that it can, what the truth is. And is willing, by the way, to acknowledge when it gets it wrong.
Right. And in that crowded media landscape, Sophie, I would imagine that having trusted source of news is, you know, more important than ever. How do we support a local journalism model that actually works, given the financial realities that the mayor is laying out for us?
Well, that's the elephant in the room, right? Local news outlets, and particularly newspapers, have been the hardest hit. Newspapers like the New York Times has been able to make a subscription model work because I think they have a large enough landscape to tap subscribe. I mean, it's national, it's international. But for local newspapers, they just don't have a broad enough base. And so you've seen advertising revenue decline astronomically. And then as the advertising revenue goes down and the newspaper shrinks, the subscribers start jumping ship. And so it's like this death spiral. And so figuring out what the model is that will work is what people have been doing for probably 15, 16 years now. Civil Beat has shown a lot of promise since switching to the nonprofit model. Their revenues have really gone up, and they've been able to expand, but they haven't solved the issue. They're still trying to figure it out. What we're doing with the HIPAA project is that we're looking at other states and other nonprofit news outlets and seeing if there are any examples that we can bring back here to Hawaii. But even the nonprofit model is tricky because you really have to have a diversified revenue stream. It can't just be grants. It has to also be donors. It's just something that we're still trying to figure out. And I don't, you know, and then there's this other aspect to it, which is the public policy issue that we're sort of looking at. Like, what are some of the public policies we might be able to implement at the local level to support local news?
Yeah, I mean, Mr. Mayor, given, you know, decades of television experience, do you think that the news is still a good business?
It's not the business it used to be. I'm so grateful that I've had the experiences that I had, you know, because, look, I've worked for some pretty great companies along the way. No matter how flowery the mission statements were, when you're running the property, you're the guy in that seat, it's always about the money, okay? It's always been about the money. And at one time, there was enough money to go around, but as that money's come down, it changes a whole lot of other dynamics. And so now what you see is, you know, they I'm not saying this to denigrate anybody, but they'll hire on the cheap. They'll ask the people who are doing work to do four and five jobs, at least, if you will, expecting they have no time to even vet stories. I mean, they've lowered the bar because the money's been lowered. It's just a fact of life. At the end of the day, no matter how ideal you might be, if you're going to do one of these things that Sophie suggests, you still have to pay people. People can't live for free, you know, and that takes money. And so it's not the same business model.
Yeah, Gerald,
I'm really sad to say that.
What do you tell students? I mean, I know you're a retired professor, but when you talk to young people who are entering this profession, I know that when people ask me, should I do journalism? I say it's a great job, but it's a risky
job.
One.
It's a great job. It has a lot of risk. You know, in media today, the news has become a commodity more than anything else. And I think we do need students, we do need journalists who have some steel disposition to try to bring journalism back to first principles, telling the truth, telling it accurately, letting people know about what's going on in their community. First principles. I think, you know, I should say that, you know, newspapers themselves, most newspapers, by the way, I think by the end of this decade will disappear. I mean, there just won't be publishing newspapers anymore.
But online dailies or things like that?
Online dailies will probably continue. Mm-hmm. Probably continue online, but just the newspaper itself. And I say that with a lot of regret because I love newspapers. I grew up in a time when, you know, we subscribed to all the newspapers.
I'm with you on that. Let's go to Sarah real quick in Hilo. We're almost out of time, but we do want to include another listener voice. Sarah, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
Please go ahead.
Speaking to the question or the thought about what business models would be successful, I think as a consumer, we want to hear more positive stories. We are tired of the constant negativity and just down news, I guess, on the mainstream news. So that's one thing that companies would do well to put more into, just to uplift their readership rather than just giving out bad news.
Sarah, thank you so much for that. You know, Mr. Mayor, we're almost to final thoughts, so just briefly. The good news model has been tried, and unfortunately, despite what Sarah says, it doesn't make money.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's true. You know? And so that's why we're trying to create good news at the city here and put it out there.
Very nice pivot.
That's the best I can tell you.
I mean, to Sarah's point, you do hear people say, I don't watch the news because I don't want to see, you know, all the bad news.
That's true.
And at the same time, we really can't escape that part of the business.
Yeah, it's part of why people tune in to watch something if it's of that kind of interest. It's just, I don't like that. We try to battle that as much as possible. And I even see the networks now, they ending their newscasts with good news of the day and stuff like that because there are Sarahs all over the world that feel that way. And what you just described, I used to hear from people as well. That's where good journalism comes in. If we had worthwhile stories, well-written, intelligent to put out there, you know, but the truth of the matter is people aren't interested in a lot of government stories and all kinds of other things that are there. They want to, it's the other stuff that feeds the interest.
Yes, Sarah, Sophie, briefly, does a good news model, have you seen that work?
Well, there are outlets like the Texas Tribune that have you know, has found a lot of success. So, yeah, I think there is hope. I don't want to be all negative. You know, I do think that there is a lot of hope in terms of what can be created in the next 10, 15, 20 years. It's just scary how much we've lost. And I think that the public doesn't actually know how much news that they've lost, because they don't know, like Gerald was saying at the beginning of the conversation, that the local newspapers had these longtime beat reporters that were there for decades covering all of these different areas. They don't know what's not being covered. And that's what scares me the most. And the fact that local news has been weakened so much, how do you reconstitute it? It's hard to create something that has become so weekend. So like once a news organization goes out of business, it's really hard to bring it back.
Absolutely. We are almost out of time, but I do want to hear from Gerald and from the mayor.
Let me say something on behalf of bad news, however you may define it. We report bad news because we want you, the reader, the public, to do something about it. Don't just sit there, read it, oh, this is bad news and terrible. We want you to get up, get angry, and do something about it. One last thing, by the way. I urge people out there to read Sophie's report on the News Desert and think about what it says about the situation here in Hawaii. And again, read it and go out there and do something about it. You know, come up with some ideas that will change the situation for the better. Sitting back and, you know, letting somebody else do it is just not going to work.
Yeah, I do want to give a plug for that report. It was excellent. You can go to HIPA.org and click on News Desert Project. It's a fantastic analysis of what is happening in our community. Mr. Mayor, we'll give you the final word. You know, given with all the challenges facing this industry, are you optimistic about the future of local journalism?
You know, I wish I could say it was really optimistic, but I want to be a forever optimist. You know, believe in creativity and the resilience of mankind, and people will find a way to evolve here. I want to be idealistic like that, but I have a guy that ran businesses and, you know, for companies for a lot of years, and there's a harsh reality there. And as I look at the economic models right now, I kind of can feel the squeeze, whether they're publicly traded or privately held. I am grounded in that reality, so I'm probably the most cynical of all, because at the end of the day, it's always about the money.
Leaving us with the hard truth this morning, we want to thank our guests, Mayor Rick Blangiardi, Sophie Koch, and Gerald Kato. We thank you, the listener, for joining us on today's show. If you're around tomorrow, please do join us. We'll be hearing from the governor. Have a comment to share about today's show? Call our talkback line, 808-792-8217. Also, send us an email, talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. If you'd like to listen back to today's show, you can check out the conversation as a podcast on Apple or Spotify. And you can also find our show on our website, hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Yenji Denise in for Catherine Cruz today. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.